Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my...
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
Hello and welcome in Wednesday edition of the program. We are headed into a big matchup on Saturday where this Indiana football team can redeem itself of sorts if they could come up with a win over Cincinnati, a good team. If you look at the group of five, you know, the other conferences that make up the remaining big conferences in college football, Cincinnati probably the best team of all of those conferences with an opportunity to make some noise in college football, maybe in the college football playoff system this year as well. So this is a chance for Indiana after a dismal effort against what we're finding out to be a very good Iowa team in week one. A bounce-back win over Idaho, who's a lackluster team. Still an opportunity for Indiana to work out some kinks. This is a big one. The crowd is going to be big. The tailgating is going to be big. The talent led by the Cincinnati quarterback Desmond Ridder is going to be big. An opportunity here for Indiana, I think, to bounce back and get back to square zero if they can get a victory over the weekend coming up for Cincinnati. So a lot about that game today. Let's take a look at the show lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Segment one coming up here in just a few moments, a Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. We'll talk about IU football. A couple big notes on IU basketball recruiting as well. Mike Woodson is going to be down our way today, just across the river in Louisville, to watch Caleb Glenn. So we'll tell you about that and more coming up here in just a moment. Also, college football. Big shakeup right now. The USC job is open. A couple names of interest have been mentioned for that job, and so we'll touch on that today. James Franklin of Penn State, one of those names from the Big Ten Conference, and high school football coming up for week five of the regular season. We'll discuss that as well. Also later in the show, Dustin Dopierak of the Daily Hoosier and also the Bloomington Herald Times is my guest. We'll really begin to dig into IU football for the upcoming game against Cincinnati. We'll take a look at what makes this Cincinnati team so good this season, or expected to be so good. They really haven't played anybody of note just yet, so Indiana's their first real big challenge of the year. They've had a cakewalk so far in weeks one and two, and so we'll talk about Cincinnati and who to note, who to be worried with, players to know, and what makes them a legitimate football contender this year as well. Also later in the hour, we'll be joined by Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune. We always talk local sports, and there's plenty to get to once again today with Josh, presented by Major League Shirt Company. We'll take a look at the high school football season as we're basically midway through the regular season. Some storylines to pay attention to. Who are the teams that are coming together at the right time? Because in a week or two, we're going to really be beginning to think about the postseason in a serious way. I know that sounds crazy, but we are getting to that part of the season. And so Josh and I will take a look at all things with high school football coming up here in just a few moments. Also, later in the hour with Josh, we'll talk Josh Rogers, who's up at the Nationals. Looks like he's got a chance to remain with the club for maybe the remainder of the season. Could he get a start in Cincinnati next week when Washington travels to Cincinnati? How awesome would that be? We'll cover that and more with Josh a little bit later in the hour. That's the show lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Check out their dinner package deals that are being offered. You can dine in, take them to go, and curbside service still available at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's get into our Zaxby's headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news. Caleb Glenn, he's a four-star player, class of 2023. We probably, from a local perspective, have spoke more about Caleb than any other recruit in the state even, because Caleb is just across the river at Louisville Male. He's been to IU for an unofficial visit back over the summer, and he left Bloomington really, really impressed. His high school coach joined us right after that unofficial visit to tell us how impressed he was with Coach Woodson and the staff and the facilities and everything that IU basketball represented on that unofficial visit. Well, now Mike Woodson is going to be in Louisville later today, expected to be there to check out Glenn. He'll be playing with his male team in an early season practice. Glenn, 6'6", currently number 38 in the 247 Sports National Composite Rankings. And Indiana continues to be in a really good place for him. It's still early in his recruitment. He's got a number of different scholarship offers. He said that he's still considering other schools that want to get involved, that want to get interested in him. But he did list Indiana as one of his top four schools a few weeks ago. So interesting to see Coach Woodson at Male today to check him out. And I think it also will be worth noting to see if Caleb makes his way back to Bloomington for Hoosier Hysteria or maybe for a game or two this season. But he's a talent. I've said this before. I've had a chance to see him play a lot, going all the way back to when he was an eighth grader. He started as an eighth grader playing at Ballard in the summer after his eighth grade year, went to Male and has played varsity basketball there now as well. One of those kind of guys, every time you see him, he does something spectacular. Every time you see him, you leave thinking that he got better from the last time maybe that you had a chance to see him play. So it was a big summer for Caleb, not just from a recruiting standpoint, but from a development standpoint as well. So going to be interesting to see if Indiana can stay closely involved with him. They seem to be in a very good position right now. Also, we mentioned earlier in the week that Indiana offered, I believe, their first 2024 class player so far, and another offer has went out. This is a five-star forward. His name is Derrick, spelled D-E-R-I-K, Queen, and he is from Baltimore, also recently transferred to, guess where, Montverde Academy down in Florida. So you've got Jalen Hood-Schifino playing for Montverde this season. You've got another 2024 player that Indiana offered earlier this week, and now you've got Derrick Queen, who is a teammate of both of those guys, playing for Montverde as well. So I would say it's safe to say that Mike Woodson and assistant coaches, whether it's in the preseason, checking out early workouts and scrimmages, or whether it's an opportunity to get away once the actual college basketball season begins. Those don't come very often, especially when you've got to make a trip somewhere across the country to watch Montverde play. But I'd say Indiana is going to have a very close relationship with this team and see as much as they possibly can this season. Again, Montverde is a player that attracts players from across the country. They are a four-year high school. They play a high school schedule. They're not really considered a prep school. They play a national circuit. They don't compete for any state championship. Very similar to La Lemire up in LaPorte, Indiana. Very similar setup to them, coached by a legendary guy at the high school level that has been there now for many years and built that program up really from the ground up. So I think it's very interesting to see Indiana getting involved with a number of Montverde players, and you got to believe with Hood-Schifino in the fold for Indiana, playing his senior year at this big-time powerhouse, that that helps the reputation of the Hoosiers and of Mike Woodson with some of those younger guys in that program as well. So a couple interesting recruiting notes today from an IU basketball perspective. And also, while we're talking about some recruiting in high school basketball, I saw earlier today that the Form Tip-Off Classic schedule has been announced, and no local teams, or at least real local teams, getting an opportunity to compete. The field is December 11th. It's played at Southport Fieldhouse. 12 teams. It's a showcase format, but some tremendous games. Southport will take on Heritage Christian. Bloomington North will take on Franklin Central. Bar Reeve and Central Noble will play each other. Crispus Attucks and Zionsville. Cathedral and Gary West. That is one of the headline games, as is Westfield and Homestead. Excuse me. And big-time recruits involved in a number of those games, starting with Cathedral. You've got Xavier Booker, who Indiana is tracking, along with many other players in the state right now, many other schools, I should say, tracking Xavier Booker. Of course, they'll take on Gary West, who has North Carolina recruit Jalen Washington. But that's just one of many great matchups that day. And this is a reminder, even though there aren't any real local teams playing, there's going to be plenty of IU potential targets to watch that day, just a reminder that as we work our way through high school and college football and having a lot of fun with it, that the high school and college basketball seasons are just around the corner when you start to see announcements like the Forum Tip-Off Classic. One other note, the USC opening on Monday, the firing of Coach Clay Helton, has kind of offered up a interesting early season sidebar of storylines, because now you've got various reports that USC could be interested in some coaches that obviously currently coaching other football teams right here as we enter week three of the college football season. One of the names that is on that list, and I have no idea how serious this situation is or not, and he was pretty nonchalant in answering questions about it yesterday, but Penn State coach James Franklin is one of many names that has been mentioned for that opening at USC. So you want to talk about disruption to a season. You're coaching a good team, a top 20 team like Penn State is this season, and have that issue come up all of a sudden. Are you going to consider a potential offer or interest from USC? So that will be interesting. The whole situation with the job, to see what they do, how they fill it, when they fill it, and ultimately, obviously, who ends up heading that direction. And when they head that direction, this is just a very interesting opening here to start the year in college football. But always wild, always wacky in the world of sports. I think we all know that for those of us that follow it on a regular basis. Also, high school football this weekend. We're going to talk more about this with Josh Cook a little bit later in the hour. Some good games. Providence at Charlestown, I think that could be a good one. Salem is at Clarksville. New Albany takes on Columbus East. That's a road game. New Albany has a 2-0 record in the Hoosier Hills Conference. Columbus East 1-1 after they lost to Seymour a couple weeks ago for the first time in 95-plus games. So this is a big one for New Albany. If they're going to win the Hoosier Hills Conference, they can take a huge step towards that on Friday night with a win at Columbus East. Floyd Central at Jeffersonville, that's a rivalry game. Both teams really need a victory. Floyd Central 0-4 so far this season. It will be the first Hoosier Hills Conference game for the Highlanders. Jeffersonville 1-2, but their one win has been a Hoosier Hills Conference victory. Silver Creek at Scottsburg. Silver Creek the favorite there, but Scottsburg 4-0, 2-0 in the Mid-Southern Conference. It's a fairly new football program, but they are really getting things together there. So can Scottsburg challenge the dominant Dragons that have been so good in recent years in Mid-Southern Conference football? We'll see how that plays out. And Rock Creek has a tough one. They go on the road to North Davies. Rock Creek is 1-2. North Davies always strong in small school football. They are 3-1 on the season. Those are your Zaxby's headlines for this Wednesday edition of the program. We'll head to a commercial break. We're back with the Bloomington Herald Times' Dustin Dopierak as we talk IU football and get you ready for the Cincinnati game. We'll start to preview the Bearcats and what makes them so tough this season. This is the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
Well, it's midweek, and IU with a big one on Saturday at home against Cincinnati. Dustin Dopierak of the Bloomington Herald Times joins as we begin to think ahead and preview this big matchup, this big challenge for Indiana. And, Dustin, I want to start with this. What have we learned so far this week from Coach Allen in press availabilities, other coaches as well, about the health of this team? There were some key guys missing in multiple areas on Saturday against Idaho. I don't think it made a big difference in the outcome, obviously, but it could this Saturday against a very good Cincinnati team when Indiana's going to need all of their weapons.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, the top-line guys are a little bit more healthy, which is important. Jalen Williams, it sounds like he's definitely back. They said they're going to hear more about Devon Matthews later this week, but it does seem like things are progressing in a good direction for him. Obviously, with his injury, he had to spend the night and really a couple nights in the hospital in Iowa City, so obviously that's good news that he's getting to the point where it seems like playing soon is a good possibility. Now, we'll find out more. I imagine we'll get to talk to him again tomorrow and get a better sense of where that's going, if the necessary progress, I guess, has been made. But it definitely sounds like Williams is back. And so those two, I think, are pretty key. Those are important. Obviously, you saw Luke Haggard and David Ellis back last weekend, and I thought that was really important, especially for Luke Haggard, because that gives them the offensive line that they had been practicing with for most of camp. I mean, they've been trying to be kind of quiet about it, but they had moved Matt Bedford to right guard a while back, and he obviously had played right tackle last year, but they had to go back to that shift, and obviously that kind of changed some things chemistry-wise, so they're in better shape on the front. Obviously, there's a couple other injuries sort of deeper in the depth chart that could be an issue. Certainly Christopher Keys is a really promising young cornerback guy they really like a lot there, and I think can kind of be the guy once Mullen and Taylor and Williams move on is sort of the next guy at corner for them. Tore his ACL, and he's going to miss the entire year. So, I mean, I think they still feel good about his long-term future, obviously. He'll do the rehab, and he'll come back, a good and even better player. But it's a significant depth loss for the moment. James Head, the defensive end, sounds like he's still probably out. Not sure how much longer he is. I mean, he would be playing the position that Ryder Anderson has been playing, and Anderson pretty much beat him out too. But that's still, an issue as far as depth is concerned. Doesn't sound like it's going to have him. But by and large, in terms of just what the lineup is, much closer to what they wanted it to be when the season started.
Dustin Dopierak, my guest. We want to talk about Michael Penix here for a moment. Coach Allen expressed this week that he feels good about the progress that the quarterback is making. Obviously, the season didn't get off to a good start for him at all against Iowa. He did appear to be somewhat better last week as far as his performance goes against Idaho, but I'm not sure what that tells us, because really, as we see Iowa beat Iowa State on the road, and we know how good their defense is, obviously Idaho nowhere near that sort of challenge for Penix or the offense. Where do you think Penix is at? What improvements did you see, and what maybe is still off about his game from when he was healthy a year ago?
Yeah, I think you did see some progress. They got him into a little bit more of a rhythm. He hit some of the easy ones. He looked a little bit less skittish in the pocket, I think. One play that they brought up on multiple occasions, not they brought up on multiple occasions, but both Tom Allen and Nick Sheridan and even Penix mentioned on Monday when we had press conferences with them, was the run, the one where he tucked and went. He only got about 2 yards, but he drew a face mask penalty, and that ended up being a pretty significant gain on that drive, which I think was maybe the first, might have been the first one in the second half. But it was significant. And so I think that mattered. I think you could see, okay, he's willing to tuck and go when he has to. And if he's willing to tuck and go when he has to, that suggests that he should be just a little bit more comfortable being in the pocket. It's like more comfortable running when he has to, more comfortable not running when it's not called for. Just being okay with contact, being, knowing, feeling confident that the next hit is not going to be the last one. Because obviously he's gone through enough, and there's got to be a mental toll of not just this ACL tear, but the first one when he was a freshman, and the sternoclavicular. The guy has had three season-ending injuries in 3 years, so you have to imagine that fear of, man, this could be the next one. I could be in rehab again, in one play. Has to be in his mind, and he's got to be able to work through and play through that, and believe, regardless of prior evidence in his career, that that's not what's going to happen. That he is going to play a whole year this year without getting hurt. So I think, but you saw some progress in that regard of him not just sort of being skittish. I think you saw him make sort of the easy throws, were kind of there. I think there was more rhythm created for him. There were more easy throws created by the play calling. So I think all of that was good. I mean, what you're still not seeing yet he's still a little skittish. And also, he hasn't really hit a deep ball yet. He's had a couple plays that went for longer yards that were kind of intermediate routes, I think, that Freifogel took and made them longer ones. You haven't seen him hit the real deep ball, and that's a big part of his game. I mean, a big part of what makes Michael Penix Michael Penix is his ability to hit the big throws, because he's got a huge arm. And, you know, you're seeing, you know, when we've seen him in practice, we've seen a lot more touch. We've seen a lot more just, you know, ability to put the ball where it needs to be and make it throw a catchable football, you know, on the deep ball. And so, again, but you haven't seen that in games at all so far. It's like, so if that is in his bag, you want to see it in live action. You want to see it at a time that counts, and you haven't seen it yet. So, and not all of that's him. I mean, they need better protection, and I think, you know, they need more from the receivers as well. I don't think you've necessarily seen those guys play their best game either. You haven't seen, I don't think, anybody outside of Freifogel really become, you know, really prove that, that, you know, basically himself too, to Penix. They haven't seen a lot of guys make big plays, and the guys are getting kind of open, but, you know, it's not like you've seen Penix miss a long list of really open throws. You know, these guys aren't crushing their, you know, the guys that are covering them, and you know, they need some more of that. So, you know, I think there's a lot of pieces that need to come together for the passing game as a whole, and obviously Penix in particular, and again, some of that is him, and but there's, you know, You just want to see more at this point. You want to see some of the throws that he hit last year, and you haven't seen them yet.
Dustin, I want to start to talk about Cincinnati coming up, the opponent for IU this weekend. We know they're legitimate. They're ranked number 8 in the country. We really haven't seen them against a big test so far this season. They haven't taken on a high major opponent just yet. Indiana will be their first, but everything I read, everything I see about them, their quarterback Desmond Ridder is someone that has the potential to be a very special quarterback in college football this year. And it seemed like a lot like I think Indiana expects things to go with Penix. Things start and begin with Desmond Ridder for Cincinnati.
No, absolutely. Just a very, very good athlete, terrific arm, but also can really beat you with his legs. And you saw it enough last year. I mean, those guys were, you know, basically went to the Peach Bowl undefeated, I think, and you know, had Georgia on the ropes before Georgia came back and won that game. So, you know, there is a lot of talent there, and starts with Ridder. And I thought there was a lot of interesting things I thought that, you know, that were said basically, you know, on Monday about Ridder. One thing that was interesting that I hadn't realized until it was brought up is that, you know, that was the last game, you know, Carlton Warren coached for Georgia. And he had to, you know, delve into him a lot then. And so, you know, Warren, just, we basically asked him about him. He's like, well, what did you see from him? He's like, you know, you can't trick him. And I thought that was a really interesting bit of analysis that basically everything, and Georgia throws a lot at you, and they have some kind of varying fronts and obviously some terrific athletes. And, you know, the one thing that really stood out to Warren is that you can't trick this guy. You can't get him, you know, out of what he wants to do very easily. So that, I think, says a lot that it's not difficult, you know, that it's tough to disguise things, that it's tough to beat him that way. You're not necessarily going to outthink him. He's, you know, like he's a really smart kid on top of being a terrific athlete with a terrific arm. And they've got a lot of pieces after that. I think Jerome Ford, they got a really strong running back. Michael Young was, I think, a second team AAC guy. Josh Wiley was a second team All-AAC tight end. They got some really good pieces on offense. It obviously starts with Ridder, and he makes a lot of plays himself, but there are weapons that are around him.
Dustin, Cincinnati, kind of an interesting program. Really in all of college sports, not just college football. They've been in a number of different conferences, and it was announced here in the last number of days that Cincinnati is en route to the Big 12 Conference to begin the replacement of Oklahoma and Texas, who left earlier in the summer for the SEC. So kind of an interesting season. Cincinnati football is supposed to be really good. This is their first big challenge coming up on Saturday at Indiana, but there's all this other stuff going on as well with their athletics program as a whole as they look to take maybe a step up into the Big 12.
No, absolutely. And you throw in the fact that, you know, you're seeing Luke Fickell's name, you know, tied to the USC job. on top of that. So there is a lot swirling outside of just this football game for Cincinnati. It does make you ask, okay, how are they going to handle all of that together? They're changing leagues and they've got a chance to lose their coach. I mean, I don't think that's something that's going to happen immediately by any stretch of the imagination. It's probably going to be an end of season thing if it does happen. But all the same, that's just sort of part of the discussion. Now, they might be, great teams tend to block that out, and maybe they are that. And yes, Cincinnati is one of those fascinating programs that always seems to be, one of the programs that conferences get when they need to fill in, more or less. I mean, that's how they ended up in the Big East way back then. When I think they were they might have been the Metro in basketball, and they've been in so many different leagues. But it's almost like, okay, like when someone else has rated you, what do you do next? Who do you go get? And the answer is frequently Cincinnati. I mean, I think they might have been, were they Conference USA before they were Big East? I mean, like they have been, truly everywhere over the course of time, and it's just, they've always just found a way to fit in, and they always seem to be in at least decent shape when it's time for those decisions to be made. It seems like they're always good whenever somebody needs them and needs somebody to bump up their the quality of their conference when they're in trouble, when someone else, the ACC came after the Big East, the Big East went after Cincinnati. And so the same thing is happening again. Basically, someone's coming after the Big 12 and the Big 12 went and got Cincinnati. So it tends to work out that way. They've just gotten really bumped around, but they've managed to hang in and maintain a pretty good program. They haven't always been good. Obviously, they have plenty of down years next to their up years, but they always seem to respond at just the right time when it comes to basically realignment time.
Dustin Dopierak of the Bloomington Herald-Times, my guest. This has come up a few times this week. Coach Allen mentioned it after the game and then earlier this week as well. But the fans, the crowd, the students arriving early, staying for the entire game, a great turnout even for a lackluster opponent like Idaho, even after the bad loss at Iowa, when maybe some of the excitement could be deflated from this team, that did not go unnoticed by the coaching staff and the players, and I think we noticed it as well. Obviously, fans are going to pack it in. It's a sold-out game already for Saturday. But it just was interesting to me that the players, the coaches, the fans, a big part of a home game situation, especially a big game like Cincinnati and some of the big Big Ten games that are still ahead. And I guess fans probably mean extra more this season because been pretty quiet in Memorial Stadium and other Big Ten stadiums and college football across the land last season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think, the students didn't stay the whole time. Once it got out of hand, they went out and did what students do on a Saturday night in a college town. But the fact that they were there early, that they showed up, then they filled the joint. I mean, I'd heard before that they'd sold 12,000 student tickets, and they were packed to the brim like a good 20 minutes before kickoff. I mean, you saw the rest of the sections were kind of slowly filing in. But the students were there, and they were there in mass, and you could tell that they made a point of enjoying this, of being reminded what it's like to be a student going to a college football game. And I think you're seeing that across the country. The kids that are in college, right now, that have gone through this pandemic, have lost so much fun stuff over the course of these last whatever 18 months, I guess. I think that's about what it is right around 18 months, right around a year and 6 months. They've lost a lot. They've lost a lot of opportunity to have a lot of fun things, whether they were, graduating at the end of 2020 or, at the end of that spring in 2020 or what. If you could be a sophomore and you haven't been to a football game yet, until this past Saturday. You never got to experience it. So there's, a whole class of freshmen that had their end of their high school years ruined, basically. And then you had, these kids that might have been graduated the year before that lost their whole freshman year of college and even the seniors, lost their whole junior year. A lot of these kids just did not get to experience kind of the fun stuff that comes along with being a college student the last year and a half. And they very much showed up to be like, hey, let's do this. It doesn't matter if it's Idaho, let's go to a college football game. That's a thing we're allowed to do again. Let's make the most of it. And they clearly did. And I think the fans really, the players really appreciated it. The coaches really appreciated it. It was noticeable. I think it matters specifically for Indiana because that's not typical A lot of times the kids sit out and just continue to tailgate and don't worry about going into the game. The fact that all those kids did show up, buy tickets, filled the joint, mattered, I think, to, you know, just showed, I think, that, you know, because it is important to, you know, not just give them an opportunity to go to a college football game again, but make them feel like Indiana football is an integral part of their college experience as students and, you know, something they're going to want to come back to and, you know, make it a place they're going to want to, you know, donate to or just be a part of when they're alum. So all of that is stuff that is really good sign for the future of the football program, for the future of the athletic department, for the future of university. Like everybody, I think, was pretty excited to see that because it's not necessarily typical for a game like Idaho.
Dustin Dopierak, my guest. Dustin, I want to close with some chat on the Big Ten as a whole. Iowa with a big win on the road at Iowa State. We obviously saw them up close and personal in week one of the season when they pretty much dominated Indiana. Ohio State, remember that first game? They were challenged until halftime by Minnesota. Then they get beat over the weekend by Oregon. Is Iowa the best team in the Big Ten Conference this season?
They could very well be. I mean, you still got to, you know, consider Penn State in that discussion. Obviously, they were able to beat Wisconsin on the road, and that's a really nice win. But Iowa probably has the two best-looking wins so far, you know, to get Indiana at home and go on the road and beat a really good Iowa State team, or a team that looks pretty good. It's definitely a steady group, obviously, as we saw. It's a team that doesn't beat itself. You know, I don't think they've got everything you want. In a sense, I don't know that, you know, I wonder when that passing game is going to get tested. I didn't really see, you know, how Petras did on Saturday. I just saw the numbers. Certainly going to be able to run the ball, and they're going to be able to defend, and that's going to give them a chance. They're going to have a shot to beat anybody. Do they end up being dominant? You know, if they catch Ohio State down the road at some point, whether that's, I'm not sure if they've got them in the regular season or not, if it would just be in the Big Ten title game in Indy, you know, what does that look like when you're dealing with that kind of firepower that Ohio State's going to bring in with their All-American receivers? You know, is that something they're going to be able to match? That's going to be a difficult question going forward. But they're in that discussion. I mean, I think right now, you know, you have Ohio State, Iowa, and Penn State are sort of separated a little bit from everybody else, and you're going to have to see a little bit play out to see, you know, who is part of that. But Iowa put itself in it at this point, that top echelon, and it is not out of the question at all that they could very well be the best team in the Big Ten. You know, don't bury Ohio State yet. Oregon's no joke either, and there's a good chance that you know, that win is sort of win that propels Oregon to being a college football playoff team. So again, you still don't want to bury the Buckeyes, certainly in the league itself. But Iowa is very much in that discussion now. You know, they're in that playoff discussion right now. Obviously, it's mid-September, so we're a whole long way off from that meaning anything. But they clearly seem to be certainly the class of the Big Ten West right now. And, you know, they're in that discussion with Ohio State and Penn State for who's the best team in the whole league.
Absolutely. Dustin, one other thing. James Franklin, coach at Penn State, he's got another good team again this season in the conference, as always. He's being mentioned as a potential replacement for the opening at USC, which is kind of odd here. The start of the season, a big job like USC comes open. He addressed it yesterday a little bit when he met with the media, but was somewhat evasive. Could he be one of the top targets for that job?
I mean, he could be. I mean, it's very fascinating to think of what USC is going to want because, you know, they've kept their powder dry, really, keeping Clay Helton around for long. He obviously wasn't the sexiest hire when they got him. And, you know, they want to get back to that. They want to go back to the Pete Carroll era when, you know, they're winning 11 games every year, going to the Rose Bowl every year, and every once in a while winning 12 or 13 and winning the whole thing. And, you know, they were the biggest game in town at that point. And so that's who they want to be again. And it's like, okay, well, who do you go to try to match that? Obviously, Pete Carroll moved on to the NFL and has, you know, won a Super Bowl there. So what's you know, that's not a guy that you can go back to. Who else is available? I know Eric Bieniemy, I think, has expressed some interest in the job, which would be a big deal, I think. So it's like, okay, what do you, you know, who do you look for if you're USC? James Franklin, I think, is definitely an attractive option. But, you know, you got to go recruit the West Coast, which is something that, you know, I don't think he has ever done. You have to get all new contacts to be successful out there. You got to get used to coaching in Los Angeles and what that life is like. It's different, very, very different than Eastern college towns. So I think he's certainly, because of the success, something you got to watch. But I don't know exactly, you know, it's going to be very fascinating to see what he deserves to be on that list. But I don't know what actually is the best fit for USC.
Yep, interesting. Dustin Dopierak, Bloomington Herald Times. He joins us Wednesdays. We talk all things IU and beyond. Lots of football today. Dustin, a big one coming up. It's going to be a fun day in Bloomington on Saturday. This is an opportunity for the Hoosiers to answer back after a somewhat shaky start so far. And, Dustin, I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We'll head to a commercial break. Another good week of Big Ten football coming up ahead, and we're going to find out, obviously, where Indiana stands a bit more, but also, is Iowa the best team in the Big Ten Conference? Where does Ohio State stand? What's going on with James Franklin? Is he a legit contender for the USC job? Plenty of storylines so far in the Big Ten Conference for football, and we'll continue to track all of them. Stay with us. We'll talk local sports next. And high school football with Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune, presented by Major League Shirt Company, after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
We're back. Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune, is my guest. This segment brought to you each week by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 T-shirt. They offer custom apparel to meet all of your needs, including T-shirts, uniforms, corporate wear, and promotional items. Let Major League Shirt Company outfit your team or organization today. Visit mlshirtco.com to find out more. Always enjoy my weekly chats with Josh on local sports. And Josh, this time of year, it's dominated by football. We've had some other outstanding storylines: Romeo Langford, Josh Rogers, Drew Ellis, Rondell Moore, we need to talk about as well. But I want to start with a topic and a sport that I probably don't give as much love to as I should, and it's pretty good as well here in the area, and that's soccer. And you saw a tremendous game last night that ended in a 2-2 tie between Providence, who's coming off of a state championship, and New Albany, who's very strong this year.
Yeah, big showdown. New Albany was the last team to beat Providence last year before Providence went on to win the Class A state title. So it was, it's a very good match. Really, it was crazy. New Albany tallied twice in the first half, and then Providence scored twice in the second half. So really, each team kind of dominated each one half. So it was, it was a great matchup, and both those teams will have a good shot at making some noise in the postseason for sure. Providence, obviously the defending state champion Class A, should have a really good shot at, winning sectional, regional, maybe making it back to semi-state again. And New Albany plays in a really competitive sectional, but they should have a good shot at the sectional title.
Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune. Let's get into some high school football now. And I had thought this. I don't know that I've ever said it on the air. I definitely had thought it, and you wrote about it here this week in the News and Tribune. Half of our local schools on a regular basis are relying on starting quarterbacks who are in their second year of high school, who are sophomores. Carter Lannon at Providence, Clay McClelland getting a lot of opportunity at Charlestown, Peyton Lacey, the new QB at Silver Creek, and Seth Sleepy at Rock Creek. So some young guys getting some experience, which might explain why some of the local teams are so up and down this year. But these young guys getting these early opportunities as a varsity quarterback in their second year of high school could pay dividends down the road.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't mention Tristan Robertson just got his first start the other night for Floyd Central, and he's a sophomore against Davies County. So, that's another one. But if you look at somebody like Darrell Simmons at New Albany, he started when he was a sophomore. So now he's a senior, and he's really leading that team. And, it just kind of shows you what can happen. And a couple years down the line, maybe for these teams, you may have really good squads a couple years from now. But, most of them are playing well, and that's just a tribute to those kids, having poise and you know, just you know, following the game plans of their teams.
Josh, I thought New Albany had a key win last Friday night at Bedford, which really helped them take a step further in the Hoosier Hills Conference. Kind of weird. New Albany starts off 0-2 against really good competition, but now they are winning, and now they have an opportunity ahead of them to play at Columbus East, who's kind of already maybe beatable, or maybe there's a chance to get a victory even on their home field, more so than ever before, because they were defeated a few weeks ago by Seymour. So New Albany could take a huge step forward, even their record, and also take a big step in the Hoosier Hills Conference as far as leading that race goes, if they could beat Columbus East, which, of course, has been a longtime nemesis of everybody in the Hoosier Hills Conference.
Yeah, I guess Columbus East might be human after all. I don't know. But, you know, obviously, having that 96-game Hoosier Hills Conference winning streak broken, you know, that was huge. And, yeah, it just kind of shows that maybe some other teams could have a shot at the title this year. And I tell you what, New Albany's got a great chance if they can win Friday night there, because, you know, that is just an absolutely tough place to play. New Albany hadn't beaten East since, I think, 2002, but they haven't won at Columbus East since 1998. So it's definitely been a while. And, you know, it'll be a huge, huge test. But if New Albany can play maybe like it has been the last couple of weeks, well, they could have a good shot. And if they win, like you said, huge step toward a Hoosier Hills Conference title. That would just be, you know, that would be absolutely, you know, big victory for them.
Josh, a couple other games on my Week 5 radar. Silver Creek 2-1. They are at Scottsburg, who is 4-0. And again, Scottsburg, somewhat similar to Silver Creek, a newer program. They bring football back at Scottsburg for the first time in many, many years. It was a process getting to have a varsity team. They started with the younger levels, built their way up, a lot like what Silver Creek, a lot like what Rock Creek has done as well. But I've heard good things about Scottsburg. I've heard they've got a very nice team. In fact, I think Scottsburg, with basketball coming up this season as well, could be getting ready to go through some good sports time. But can this Scottsburg team at 4-0, are they ready to play with Silver Creek and challenge the Big Dog Dragons?
Yeah, we'll find out Friday night. I'm not sure they're quite at that level yet. But like you said, they've started off. They're, you know, they're 4-0. They're undefeated, so you know, hard to argue with a start like that. So you know, congrats to them. But I still like Silver Creek quite a bit in this game, but you know, it'll be a good you know, good test for Scottsburg as far as, you know, where they're at in their program and development, that kind of stuff. But at this point, you know, Silver Creek didn't get to play last week, had a last minute cancellation, so you know, I know they're just looking forward to getting back out in the field and playing a game and you know, hoping they're not rusty or anything from last week.
Josh Cook, another game we got to talk about. It's a rivalry game, and both teams have had their struggles. Floyd Central 0-4 this season, but they're young, and they have played just an outstanding slate of competition so far. They will take on, obviously, Jeff, who, that's a big game when the two hook up. Jeff 1-2, got off to a slow start, missed week one with some COVID issues. I think it could be a good game. I'm not sure that either team is going to be in contention for the conference or a sectional championship at the end of the year this season. But nonetheless, the winner of this game, given where the records are at, where both teams are at, it's a big momentum boost.
Yeah, definitely. This will be the first time they played this season after they played three times last year. So, you know, it's a little bit by this time last year, they played at least once, maybe twice. You know, it should be a good game. I expect it to be a good game. You know, as you mentioned, Floyd has had some problems because they've played just a really, really tough schedule. They've played 3 6A teams from Kentucky, and I think they might get put in a Kentucky district if they play anybody else from Kentucky. So hopefully they come out of those games, you know, they learned some stuff. They made some improvements. So I think it'll be a really good opportunity for them against Jeff. And like you mentioned, Jeff played really well in week one against Seymour, and then They've had, in week two against Seymour, and then they've had a couple of difficult road games. So they're looking to get back on track here when they host Floyd on Friday night. And, if Jeff can win, Jeff would still that would put Jeff at 2-0 in the conference, and they would still be in the mix. So, it's really a big game for both teams. Floyd wants to break the winless streak, and then Jeff can get in the Hoosier Hills conference race really with a victory.
Yeah, absolutely. Josh Cook, my guest, talking local sports. This segment brought to you by Major League Shirt Company, home of the $4 T-shirt. Josh, we've had a chance to talk a lot about Josh Rogers recently. He got another start on Friday night, pitched pretty good, left the game with his team ahead. Ultimately, the Nationals would lose, so a no decision for Rogers, who remains 1-0. And there is a chance, I think, that he gets an opportunity, if the pitching rotation works correctly, where he could throw for the Nationals next week when they come to Cincinnati for some games. But today I want to talk about Drew Ellis of Jeffersonville. Got an opportunity to play for the Diamondbacks this season. He did get sent back down to AAA, the Reno club, for the Diamondbacks. And in his first at-bat back at the AAA level, maybe he was a little angry. He had a blast out of the stadium. So he continues to have a good year, and I think is hopeful for a major league future.
Yeah, definitely. He tore it up at Triple A Reno earlier this year, and then once he got sent back down, he just picked up where he left off, hit a home run in his first at bat, and then he's been I think he hit his second one last night, so he's really hitting the cover off the ball at this point when he got back down there. But hopefully he gets another chance here before the end of the season to get back up to Arizona and maybe continue to make some noise for them.
Josh Cooks.
Great opportunity for him.
Josh Cook, sports editor of the News and Tribune. That's going to wrap up this Wednesday edition of the program. Back with you Thursday at 11 o'clock on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.